You are listening to Radio Albion.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to a new edition of The Orthodox Nationalist. This is Matthew Raphael Johnson, and this is being recorded on the evening of February 22nd, 2025. In fact, we are very close to the three-year anniversary of the Russian invasion of eastern Ukraine, and in fact, that's what we're going to talk about tonight. One of the great tragedies, and there's many, of this war is that by now, probably over the last year, maybe even more, the lot of these Ukrainian boys at the front is beyond description. There's no supplies. The wounded are left to die. Corpses are left to rot. There's really nothing that can be done. God knows what they're being told as they're being sent to the front. Many of them have minimal training, very poor leadership. This Lent, I think Orthodox people really need to pray for these boys. It's a living hell. And the Russians, of course, are in Xanadu by comparison. And the collective PTSD, the individual level, I mean, this is beyond, they might as well be in World War One for all we know, as far as we're concerned, because it's the intensity is just that bad. No one's going home. These boys, they're on a tour of duty that never ends. There's no one to replace them. They have no hope. Drug abuse, mental illness, we all know. If you heard my Daily Nationalist a few days ago, you know, I covered this, and I don't know what we can do about it, but the majority of these boys are Orthodox in one way or another, and it's a shame that Orthodox people have to harm one another this way. But who is to blame? And who's to blame is what we're going to talk about tonight. I've said many times on this and other programs that the main reason that the special military operation took place was that the Ukrainian army was planning a huge invasion of the Donbas. The purposes of cleansing it of Russians, which would have left it almost uninhabited, to take the industrial might of the area and, of course, sell it off. And the same thing for Crimea. And that these invasion plans were known in advance. And the only reason that they didn't happen was the special military operation. This is why it occurred, when it did, and why it did, and how it did. In other words, the war had been going on, of course, since 2014, but more specifically, late 2021, early 2022, it was to prevent a very large Ukrainian invasion of the Donbas. The disinformation element was called Operation Crushing Sword. The U.S. and NATO had spent 8 years at that point building up Kiev's military forces for that very purpose, despite its widespread poverty. And I've said it, but we haven't spoke about it in detail. And once it's established, the entire narrative changes entirely. Of course, the invasion was justified for many reasons. This is only the most serious one. Now, before we get into 3 years ago, You go back to June of 2014, where Poroshenko was installed as president of Ukraine. After Maidan, the Luhansk People's Republic and Donetsk People's Republic, or Donbas, were formed, and their militias performed admirably against the Ukrainian armed forces. And at this point, they took control of their border with Russia. And that was very important because there was a huge influx of volunteers and humanitarian assistance from Russia as a result. The Ukrainian army was tasked with taking control of that border and to encircle these republics. And of course, this was known. The alarm bells were rung in military intelligence circles in Russia. It was known, but in the LPR and DPR, it was they knew that something serious was going on by the middle of February 2022. But back in 2014, they formed the Federation of Southeastern Ukraine, Novorossiya. They announced the unification of their militias, the National Army of the Southeast. And of course, they had placed themselves on the financially on the Russian ruble. But as that summer went on, of course, Ukraine had taken action against these rebellious republics. And they used the national battalions, like, you know, Right Sector or ADAR, and they as irregulars. And but the rebel militias, Donbas militias, did extremely well. In fact, they were shooting down Ukrainian planes. You had serious battles near Luhansk, like at Medalist or Kirovsk, Krasny Liman, and the Ukrainians were losing men. And they were using the National Guard, territorial forces, rather than regulars. Yes, Yampol was taken by the National Guard eventually, but not without serious losses. All ceasefires Poroshenko wanted to institute were just to rearm and regroup. Peace talks were held in June of 2014, but the shelling resumed on the 27th. Ukrainian Air Force struck places like Stanitsa Luhanska with cluster bombs. All targets were civilian, almost by the definition of the of how this was organized. Four people were killed on the spot, a five-year-old, Vanya Yermilov. The armed forces were led by Igor Strelkov, who was Donbas military commander, who, of course, had tremendous experience at this point in fighting the Ukrainian army. And certain villages and cities that we kind of know today very well were going back and forth at the time. As July dawned, there seemed to be a string of victories for the Ukrainian security forces. They had taken Zhukovka, Kramatorsk, and places like that, Seversk. They started using the MLRS on a massive scale, which, of course, was what could only cause massive casualties in the civilian population. When we say shelling, we're not just talking about conventional World War II kind of artillery. We're talking about MLRS as well. And even Human Rights Watch at the time, shockingly enough, was reporting on this. There's four attacks documented by Human Rights Watch occurred in close proximity to government and rebel front lines. And the examinations that Human Rights Watch did, despite their being closely connected with the regime and leftist NGOs, they were being hit with rockets. It wasn't like cannon artillery. It was very clear that they were deliberately hitting residential areas. And there was no doubt about it. Civilians were being killed in huge numbers. Now, according to UNICEF, from the end of the war, this first segment of the war in 2014, to the Russian invasion, something like 35 to 45,000 civilians were killed in shelling. And so what there was of the Ukrainian Air Force, of course, you know, the Republics didn't have air power whatsoever. Of course, they were hitting places like Zhezny at the time, and many children were being killed. And again, as July, the middle of July, the Kiev army took places like Druzhinsk, Soledar, Advika, which of course became very important later on. The Ukrainian army tried to drive a wedge between Donetsk and Luhansk, driving deeper, trying to cut the territory into two, and they failed. They occupied some border villages, but the rebels soon retook them. Now, the Kievan press was, and of course the U.S. wasn't questioning anything, was talking about all these cities being taken, and it turns out that it was rarely true. I guess the most famous battle in August, near Lovaysk, small town, maybe 20,000 people, August 23rd, Ukrainian troops hit it with guns and mortars, armored vehicles. August 19th, the Ukrainians occupied it. The next day, they were thrown back. They tried to take the city even before then and ended up being surrounded, what we call the Southern Cauldron. Five Ukrainian brigades were surrounded at the time. And so the Ukrainian volunteer battalions were transferred to Lovaysk, Donbas, Azov, Tornado. The Ukrainian general staff wanted to take this place by Ukraine's Independence Day on August 24th. So they threw everything at taking this city. The Ukrainians failed, partially because they relied on irregulars. Many of these irregulars retreated in disorganization. And by the Ukrainian Independence Day, it still hadn't been taken at all. Now that many of the Ukrainian forces at the time were encircled, and it took the 92nd Mechanized Brigade, 2,000 Ukrainian soldiers, tried to break through the encirclement, and it failed. And that's what a cauldron essentially is. Of course, in Kiev, this was called the ATO, the anti-terrorist operation. And this battle was a humiliating defeat for Kiev. The Ukrainian defense minister, Valery Hiliti, said 105, which I think is ridiculous. And that was at the time, April 2015, the chief military prosecutor, Anatoly Matyos, said 459. And 180 were missing near the city. However, the head of the Ukrainian Rada's investigative commission, and they were investigating the circumstances of that defeat, and it was led by Andrei Sinchenko, he said 3,500. This started a string of victories for the rebels, for Novorossiya. The rebels drove the Ukrainian armed forces and the Adar volunteer battalion out of various villages adjacent to Sarmozila. And their string of victories continued. The airport in Luhansk was recaptured. Villages of Georgievka and Uspenska were captured. In just 2 days in this period of time, late August, 120 Ukrainian soldiers were killed, six Ukrainian tanks, four infantry fighting vehicles, armored personnel carrier were all destroyed. On September 3rd, the rebels shot down a Ukrainian military plane. I don't know the type. Had to have been a transport of some kind with 35 men on board. And it continued. On the southern front, militias took control of the villages of Skorny, coming close to Mariupol. On September 5th, the offensive stopped. And it stopped not because, you know, the Ukrainian army had fought back, but because the politicians had entered into something called the Minsk Agreement. And it was very naive. It was called, technically, it was the Protocol on the Results of Consultations of the Trilateral Contact Group regarding joint steps aimed at implementing the peace plan of President Poroshenko and the initiatives of President of Russia, Vladimir Putin. That's the full title. That was signed in Minsk in Belarus Of course, it was an error. Its sole purpose was to permit Kiev to build up his forces again. Clearly, they had lost. Clearly, the Kievan army had been defeated. And now, for the next 8 years, NATO and the U.S. is going to be building Ukraine's military might such that they can retake the area. And, of course, Crimea, if possible. The results would have been absolutely catastrophic. Now, the point of all this is to show that the warfare between rebels and the U.S.-backed Kiev regime, that the fighting was constant. The severe fighting that I just mentioned, going through the summer and very early fall of 2014, had died down. That was a preamble. But that war never really stopped. It was a low-level war that never ended. Therefore, given Ukraine could not afford, and the West could not afford, another humiliation and defeat as it had suffered at the hands of the Donbas militias. So it was a slow, methodical buildup. And of course, we're going to talk about that in great detail. And to smash this before it came over the border into those two republics was the purpose of the SMO. February 24th, 2022, 6 in the morning, Putin made his second address, not just to the Russian nation, but it was addressed to Ukraine and the rest of the world. He outlined the situation, the buildup of Kiev's forces right on her borders. In fact, a huge portion of this now enlarged, artificially enlarged Ukrainian army was on the border of the republics. And this is Russian-speaking, Russian area, having no desire to be a part of Ukraine whatsoever. Putin talked about how the West has arrogantly ignored Russia's demand for security guarantees, non-expansion of NATO to the East, going back to the bombing of Belgrade without any UN support, the wars unleashed by the U.S. in Iraq, Libya, and Syria. And he rightly said that these led to massive casualties, destruction, and an incredible surge in terrorism. Therefore, we have no reason to think that the same wouldn't be happening here. But because this was specifically aimed at Russian speakers, because they were Russian and hence pro-Moscow, he considered it a genocidal attack. And they would have done it. And if it hadn't been stopped almost 3 years ago exactly, they would have gone to Crimea. You know, Kiev never would forgive the Crimeans for their choice to reunite Russia. The special military operation was something forced on Moscow. Its goal was to protect Russian speakers. Those who have been subjected to the abuse of the Kiev regime for that 8 year period from 2014, the end of the war in 2014 to 2022. In the process, Ukraine had to be demilitarized, and those who had committed these crimes needed to be brought to justice. Of course, Ukraine was to be a neutral entity. Kind of like, you know, Finland and Austria used to be. They never included the occupation of Ukraine. And interestingly, he called on Ukrainian soldiers. How successful he was, I don't know. He told them, "You swore an oath of allegiance to the Ukrainian people and not to the anti-human junta that is robbing Ukraine and mocking these very people. Do not follow these criminal orders. I call on you immediately to lay down your arms and go home. All servicemen, the Ukrainian army who fulfill this requirement, will be able to leave the combat zone without hindrance and return to their families. I would like to emphasize once again, all responsibility for possible bloodshed will be entirely on the conscience of the ruling regime in Ukraine." The situation in the Donbas began to escalate well, throughout the year, really, the ending of 2021 and the beginning of 2022, February 18th, 2022, the republics had to evacuate civilians to Russia. They knew that the Ukrainians were planning an invasion. February 21st, leaders of those two republics, Leonid Pashchenik and Denis Pushilin, they appealed to Putin with a request to recognize their independence. Putin had an emergency meeting at the Russian Security Council, and he did recognize the sovereignty of those two republics and as sovereign nations. Of course, now they're part of Russia. So it was very clear, as Putin said, we're protecting 700,000 Russian citizens living in the southeast of Ukraine. Russia has been provoked for a long time. And all of this in the midst of diplomatic negotiations. This decision to launch the special operation makes sense, and it fits into the logic of his previous actions. He didn't start a war, he stopped one. One that would have led to the slaughter of hundreds of thousands of civilians. Now, in the early days of the SMO, documents were uncovered, taken from the Ukrainian National Guard Command, that confirm in detail the Kiev regime's covert preparation of the offensive on Donbas, which was supposed to be sometime in March of 2022. It was signed by the commander of the National Guard, Colonel General Mykola Balan, on January 22nd. It was backed by the West. Of course, nothing was going to occur without NATO's support. An attack on the joint forces of the Donbas, special units of the National Guard from the northern Kiev, southern Odessa, and the western territorial administrations, specially chosen and trained psychologically and physically. They had to be ideologically totally impeccable as far as Kiev was concerned. The official representative of the Russian Defense Ministry at the time, General Igor Konashnikov, who, when he exposed these papers, I've seen them, they were all over the place at the time, he said, "I would like to especially note that this unit of the Ukrainian Airborne Assault Troops have been trained by American and British instructors under the NATO standard training programs in Lvov since 2016. The deputy commander of the National Guard was tasked with organizing combat coordination of the battalion tactical group of the National Guard as part of the 80th Separate Airborne Assault Brigade of the Armed Forces of Ukraine from February 7th to 28th, 2022. This preparation, this special psychological preparation of the military personnel here, he spent quite a bit of time talking about it, especially when it came to their readiness to accept risk, because they were, at least according to their own propaganda, going to be attacking and killing other Ukrainians. I've seen, and some of you may have seen these documents when my paper is published here, I'll have all of the hot links to them and all the signatures and everything else. It's really not really an issue anymore. It was very clear what they were planning on doing. But none of it would have happened without the leadership of the U.S. and NATO, specifically the U.S. So this forestalled a long-prepared attack Ukrainian military on Donbas. Now, at the time, the propaganda, both in the West and in Ukraine, said this was all, slander and nonsense, despite the state of war that had existed and the massive buildup of their forces. Something interesting, which I didn't pick up on at the time when I was preparing for this, a Rada deputy, Oleksiy Goncharenko, in 2021, he was actually speaking from the rostrum, February 23rd, with a very frank statement. He said, "The Rada Budget Committee has just decided to hold one of its summer off-site sessions in liberated Donetsk. This is included in the calendar plan of work of the Budget Committee of Ukraine." Now, that's an interesting comment, that they had officially approved their summer meeting in liberated Donetsk, which means that they were going to take the city. And the city, of course, had to be cleansed of any supporters of Russia. That's the most influential committee of the RADA, of the legislature. And they were so confident that they were going to take it that they scheduled an off-site meeting there just a few months in advance. There's no other way to interpret it. It's an admission the plan to attack Donbas was approved in advance by Kiev, and hence, of course, the U.S. And it's not just, you know, the sorts of weapons that the Ukrainian military was buying, being trained in, were purely offensive. But they had been bloodied before. You know, Kiev is a colony, was and is a colony of the United States. One of the ways we know about this is not so much, you know, the attack on the Minsk agreement came from the U.S. too. Their constant attempt to withdraw from it. The Minsk agreements technically prevented offensive weapons from being used, so Kiev was told that they're not going to listen to Minsk anymore. They regularly violated the ceasefire. They shelled peaceful cities, the Novorossiya, for 8 years in a row. That is to say, after their defeat in the Kievan army's defeat in 2014. But in order for an invasion to take place, they had to be totally canceled. And there was actually a ministry set up for the reintegration of the temporarily occupied territories. And the minister for that ministry was Oleksiy Reznikov, who came out and just said the Minsk agreements don't apply to us anymore. And in fact, it was after that that Reznikov was made Minister of Defense. Despite he was just a lawyer, he doesn't know anything about military affairs. Minsk was only a tactical break and nothing more. And in this period of time, throughout the first half of February 2022, Minsk was, you know, torn apart and eventually just completely rejected in the Ukrainian press, which was very tightly controlled. Zelensky himself said the same thing. There was a massive grouping of the Ukrainian armed forces on the border of Donetsk and Luhansk. If you remember, if you were listening to me back then, going back, even going back later, 2014, 2015, the Western press would occasionally talk about a Russian invasion. They said this pretty consistently. And it was such a bizarre thing to say, since no one seemed to notice this. Now, of course, we know what it is. They were covering for an actual Ukrainian invasion. Especially when the Ukrainian armed forces were defeated September of 2014, the assumption in the American media was that the Russians had invaded the area and were fighting under various disguises, and they're the ones who had pushed back the Ukrainian army. Hence, there was a Russian invasion. But they said this so commonly, they said it all the time, that it just became, I don't know how many invasions they could have come up with. But it was clear that the West and its goal was to provoke a war with Russia on Ukrainian territory. Minsk, again, it had run its course. The West could have very easily forced Kiev to comply with the agreement long ago, but they didn't. And if anything, they forced Zelensky to violate the agreements and then eventually launch this offensive into Donbas. Initially, Zelensky didn't want this. He was perfectly happy just stealing budget funds and offshore accounts and everything. But getting involved into something like this would lead to him now sitting in a bunker, fearfully terrified, awaiting his deserved retribution. He tried to back down. Ukrainian politician at the time, Vasil Volga, February 19th of 2022, he said the same thing. United States, the Americans are lying and demanding war. England is saying the same thing. Everyone else is following in their wake. Zelensky has no choice. They will force him. February 23rd. consensus had emerged, a Ukrainian political establishment, that Donetsk was going to be liberated very soon. That we're not expecting the invasion to take place when it did, of course, because it was initially planned for some time in March, although there's some debate about that. The deputy who said that they're going to have their meetings in liberated Donetsk, Goncharenko, was interesting because he started his career as very much a pro-Russian politician. He lived in Moscow. He studied in Moscow for a long time. But over the years, he had been integrated to the American USAID grant programs since at least the mid-2000s. So then he became the man entrusted to organize the bursts of actions against Russia. He was tasked in creating the legislative justification for all of this. And it was very important for him to justify this at the legislative level, financially and every other way. There was also a Ukrainian claim to Kuban, as well as places like Belgorod, Voronezh, and other regions of the Russian Federation. And in fact, that had been said more than once, that this was not just going to be an invasion of Donetsk and Luhansk, it was going to be an invasion of these border areas as well. One of the people justifying that was a guy named Alexander Turchinov. Bizarrely enough, a Baptist minister, which almost always means CIA, and he was head of the Security Council of Ukraine at the time. So there was a sense that it was going to go much farther than Donetsk, with the help of NATO, even going to take the North Caucasus away from Russia. And those elements, of course, are still there. Those elements are still in Kiev, which means that only really a military coup, preferably a Cossack military coup, to take over and cleanse Kiev of these elements. That's the only way that anything is going to be done. Cossacks, pro-Russian, whatever, you know, the pro-Russian military, elements in Ukraine have to carry this out. The humiliation at this point has gotten too bad. So as it stands, the consensus figure is that the SMO occurred one day before the Ukrainian invasion plans. On the night of February 24th, Kiev's nationalists were, or 23rd, the national, so-called nationalist brigades were preparing to launch an offensive on Donbass. Russian intelligence knew about this, and that NATO was involved in it, that NATO had plans to deploy four brigades of their own men on the territory of Ukraine, two infantry, one naval battalion, and the other in the Air Force. The NATO leadership wanted to agree on this deployment the summer of 2022, the meeting of the UN Security Council. This was a plan, anyway. They wanted a conflict provoked and started full-scale military actions against Russia where nuclear weapons were not off the table. Again, this is something else that Russian military intelligence was quite aware of. The regime had their plans completely ruined. I think even now we don't know the tremendous significance of Putin's invasion of eastern Ukraine. The number of lives Putin saves by doing this, and it's very clear, you know, he was going very slowly. He doesn't move forward until areas are totally and completely under Russia's control. As I said a few days ago, the war-torn areas of eastern Ukraine have been rebuilt. It happened very quickly. And you notice how in America, you know, it takes years to fix a bridge, or the same stretch of highway is being redone, and you know, over 2 years. Well, far worse circumstances. These areas have been already rebuilt. Fateful decisions were being made in Kiev. It's interesting that the Ukrainian army, they weren't going to use regulars 100%. The national battalions were going to do a lot of the fighting. Now, the exact date, I mean, there's one, you know, the national battalion was supposed to go in February 25th. But once that was confirmed, they had to go in as quickly as humanly possible. But a week before the Russians started the SMO, the press secretary of the military department of the Donetsk Republic, Eduard Basudin, reported on a map of the offensive in Donbass intercepted from the Ukrainian armed forces. I mentioned this already. It laid out where long-range artillery strikes would be carried out using the MLRS, aviation, operational tactical groups, respectively, as I mentioned, the north, the south, and the east, the attempt to cut out Donetsk and Luhansk, cut them in two, to go to the border, to then surround these areas. The right sector was supposed to go to, in essence, the regulars were acting under the cover of groups like the right sector. Surrounding them, cutting off the border with Russia was very important, of course. And it was very clear that once that's done, a complete cleansing to the population of pro-Russian elements had to take place, which is the overwhelming majority of the population. And it's not even that the cities were meant to be captured initially, but just surrounded and blocked and starved out. None of these plans could ever occur without NATO support. At this point, 5,000 American soldiers, and the numbers seem low, but 5,000 American soldiers were transferred to Poland. In fact, the Polish army itself, according to this plan, was supposed to block Russia's Kaliningrad group. So if anything happened, it couldn't advance to the attack territory of southeastern Ukraine. The Striker Brigade and the 1,000 men in Romania, they were to blockade Transnistria. And the peacekeepers located there could not advance through the south to Odessa. It's all supposed to be a very tight time frame, a single set of actions to start on the 25th. And all of these things, these moving pieces, are supposed to happen in a very, very short time frame, very tight. But it was on March 9th, 2022, that the Russian Defense Ministry posted the original combat order, as I mentioned, of the Ukrainian National Guard, General Nikolai Balan. Talking about, and now in even more detail, that these, I've, you know, again, there's plenty of PDFs of these online, and all the signatures and everything else, and all of the tasks that I already went over. And you have, you know, documents addressed to the heads of the various territorial departments of the National Guard, strike groups of offensive actions, so-called joint forces operation in Donbass. And the more, you know, the comprehensive support and subordination of the 80th Separate Airborne Assault Brigade of Ukraine. And that part of it is less interesting to me, but again, the thorough selection of personnel for psychological readiness, this is always very interesting. And a representative of the defense ministry talked about it like this. He said, "I'd like to draw your attention to the fact that five paragraphs of the fourth point are devoted to the issues of careful selection of personnel, examination of all by psychologists, and ensuring their high motivation. For this purpose, the National Guardsmen are ordered to be provided with visual propaganda, information, and propaganda materials, flags, and printed materials. Those who don't meet that criterion are not allowed to be sent to the combat coordination area." Now, maybe later on, this is why the Nationalist Brigades were used. Many of them trained in Israel or by Israel. Now, up until the SMO, the Kiev regime had denied all of this. When the documents came out, not a whole lot was said. Russia was still trying to solve it diplomatically, but there's no question that these are legitimate documents. It's not known in great detail how deeply the U.S. and NATO was involved, but of course they had to have been at the deepest levels. It's supposed to be early March. There's some disagreement there. So the February 24th SMO thwarted a large-scale offensive, and not just by Ukrainian regulars, but by these national battalions who did not have the discipline. And they were essentially civilians, not necessarily even controlled by Kiev. That's why the motivation issue is so strong. They were willing to go in and start killing people. And I have to say, the same thing goes for Crimea. There's a hacker group called Berigini. He was a correspondent for Pilot Navigator in Russian. The chief of staff of the tactical group North, Petro Romaglio, regarding the plan for using the operational tactical group when it was made public, it says, the goal of the offensive operation is defined as the defeat of enemy troops defending themselves in the borders of Donetsk and Luhansk, or the capture of important key areas, the establishment of control over liberated territory, and ensuring the functioning of state authorities in parts of those regions. 16 brigades in total to break through the Republic's defense, encirclement of large cities, and hence starving out the rout of the Donbass forces. Then the documents say the end result will be the defeat of the enemy in certain offensive zones, blocking of settlements like Gorlovka, Yanikievo, the restoration of control over parts of temporary occupied territory in Donetsk and Luhansk regions. The point was to isolate the captured territories and purge the local population. There's no doubt about it. The documents say the punitive forces were to conduct search, strike, special regime infiltration measures. Filtration, not infiltration, filtration, to filter the population. It says Crimea will be Ukrainian or will be uninhabited. Because, you know, the referendum, such a massive majority, Kiev knew that they didn't want to be a part of Ukraine. Hence, these elements had to be removed. And this was known indirectly at first, and then a week or two after the SMO, it was known now directly. You know, this tight time frame was essentially 5 days for all of this to be done. It was a blitzkrieg. The elements, in the direction, first of all, of Kramatorsk to reach Yanikievo within 3 days, and then border of Russia. Then the Azov direction, Kiev plans an offensive from with a naval landing from Novozovsk, and that should they should read Yovask, of course, within 2 days and moved in the direction of Krasnoluk. In the Luhansk direction, the armed forces of Ukraine want to move towards to join up with the South Group at Altievsk. Now, he also noted, this is Basur, and as I quoted before from Donetsk, or the Donbass forces, he's quoting the documents here. Sleeper cells of the SBU on the territory of the republics were then called on to carry out sabotage on transport routes deep in the territory of these republics, the use of liquidation and kidnapping of individual officials from the leadership. And of course, it had to be accompanied by a massive strike by artillery aircraft, helicopters, and drones to destroy very quickly the civilian and military infrastructure of the republics, to a depth around 10 miles from the contact line. Now, how Kiev was covering for this was saying that Russia's buildup of forces is the real threat. We're not doing anything. We're not shelling anybody. Human Rights Watch is making things up. It's the Russians who are invading. They've invaded many times already, according to them. But as I mentioned before, February 18th, even after that, large evacuations of the civilian population from Novorossiya, and there's no doubt they knew something was happening. The OSCE, the European Special Monitoring Mission, recorded on February 18th 870 ceasefire violations per day. This was a softening up procedure. They were going to they moved about 700,000 people to Russia, primarily women, the children, and the elderly. They had the transport to do it, of course. And even at that point, 25,000 had already left Luhansk. They had buses, trains, personal transport, whatever. So in January of 2022, there was an air bridge to Ukraine It's more than half of the planned 45 flights have already been carried out, each transport bringing up 90 tons of weaponry. And the at the time, the Minister of Defense, Reznikov, at that point, 1,300 tons of weapons in a very short time. Great Britain, the same thing. Provided the armed forces with 2,000 NLOW grenade launchers. You had some stuff from Poland, the Baltics, Canada, Denmark, etc. The Javelin, anti-tank, the Stinger man pads, counter-battery warfare stations, ammunition. As I already mentioned, you had movements of American soldiers. The 82nd Airborne Division arrived in Poland from the USA. As I mentioned, there was 5,000 troops already in the country. Another 3,000 at Warsaw's request were sent in mid-February. And the point was to block any action by Russia near Kaliningrad. Both Poland and Romania were a part of this. It seems that these numbers are low, but I guess they were to draw fire, and hence Russia fired on us, and therefore we can go all in. Though I don't know how that even that's possible. 4 American strategic bombers arrived at the Royal Air Force Base in Fairfoot to put pressure on Russia. They were accompanied by special aircraft with maintenance personnel. The B-52H aircraft based in the Minot, North Dakota, part of the 69th Bomb Squadron and the 5th Bomb Wing. They were capable of carrying precision cruise missiles with nuclear warheads. 8 American F-15 CD Eagle fighters equipped with the AIM-120 air-to-air missiles. They arrived in the Polish air base in Lusk. Pentagon stated the aircraft are ready to patrol the airspace of Ukraine, together with fighters of the Ukrainian Air Force. Not to mention, this is all at the same time here. This is all, you know, mid-February. Or January, February, right up until, you know, the SMO. A massive buildup of the Navy in the Eastern Mediterranean. The U.S. 6th Fleet had been replenished. The guided missile destroyers, Donald Cook, Mitscher, the Sullivans, and Gonzales. Each ship, depending on the mission, could have between 56 or 100 Tomahawk cruise missiles. And that was led by the aircraft carrier Harry S. Truman, also in the Mediterranean. Interestingly, none of that was activated. None of that mattered after the SMO took place. The Donbass leadership also noted Ukrainian reconnaissance and sabotage groups in the conflict zone clearly had had training in urban warfare, urban combat from foreign instructors. Transfer of the 14th Mechanized Brigade, Ukraine. It's not the first time a lot of this stuff happened, but it was very clear that this was different from other times. The constant media prattle about a Russian invasion was to cover over the fact that there was going to be a Ukrainian invasion. One of the people who were doing this cover was Kiev's permanent representative to the UN, Sergei Klistystia. During a Security Council meeting on the Ukrainian issue, he said, Ukraine has no intention of launching an offensive either in Donbass or Crimea or anywhere else, despite the fact that a massive proportion of the entire Ukrainian armed forces were on the border of the Donbass. But they also said, they rule out the implementation of Minsk. We're not listening to Minsk anymore. The Secretary of the National Security and Defense Council, Alexander Danilov, said, if we follow Minsk anymore, it's going to destroy Ukraine. So I guess by mid-February of 2022, it was a dead letter. All attempts then to go beyond Minsk were thwarted. This huge and very sudden increase in support from the regime under the pretext of defending them from a Russian invasion. Oleg Popov, who was the, in Luhansk, was the People's Council Committee, State Security and Defense. He spoke of the invasion plans early February 2022. He said, there's aggression by Ukraine and Donbass. The probability of an attack has always been and will be, because the Ukrainian army knows for sure that our brother neighbors, I guess he means Russia, will help us and will not leave us in trouble. We have no doubt that in the event of aggression from Ukraine, the entry of its armed forces into our territory, the death of numerous Luhansk residents, here now more than 700,000 people already citizens of Russia, Russian peacekeeping forces will enter our territory to prevent mass casualties among the population. If necessary, in order not to be an aggressor for the West, we have the right to appeal to Russia, Belarus, and the CSTO. Therefore, if there's a massive and large-scale military aggression against the Donbass republics, it's possible that the CSTO, the Russian Security Agreement Group, may join the Russian peacekeepers. Yeah, the regime, you know, tends to act in very predictable ways. From the Rose Revolution in Georgia, the Orange Revolution in Ukraine, Russia was able in 2008 to roll right over Georgia, something that Ukrainians noticed. Concerning the South Ossetia and Abkhazia, 2008. Now, Rudenko has already mentioned in 2022, he says that the rhetoric from Kiev has been more aggressive than ever. He said the rhetoric hasn't been like this for many years. Very explosive. Huge Ukrainian forces at the front. Yet there was a sense that the cauldrons of 2014, 2015, you know, gave them a reality check. But now they think they're invincible. This aggressive rhetoric and clear, blatant military preparations, everyone knew what was going on. Anyone who was involved in the East, these preparations, of course, in the Western media, all you heard was preparations of yet another Russian invasion. Zelensky was doing everything he could to escalate the conflict in the Donbas. Biden had promised him maximum support. Here's what the Ukrainian state media said. This is just one example. Our troops will have to fight on the ground. However, the transfer of intelligence information in real time, supply of weapons, and the organization of a no-fly zone in the air over the combat zone, Ukraine will be able to ask for all this, and with high probability will receive it from NATO. The key factor for us is the air. Russian aviation has no chance in a clash with NATO aviation. Ha! And this, I've seen this. I saw it at the time. It was all over the social networks in Ukrainian. The belief that this would be just another repetition of Iraq. And so there was a huge blitz in the media where Kiev was trying to convince the Ukrainian society that there won't be any cauldrons like there were in 2014, that Russians won't come to the aid of Donetsk and Luhansk because Washington, London, Paris, they've promised that we'll do everything we can. Ukrainians created the Center for Combating Russian Disinformation. It came from Decree Number 137/2021, signed on April 2nd, 2021, the day after a secret meeting headed by Polina Lysenko. There's a letter of gratitude she got from the FBI for the successful operation of the American Special Services in Ukraine. She was essentially an employee. And she was supervised by the deputy director, who was a Georgian citizen, who worked for the U.S. Embassy. So this was an American operation. Zelensky, in the days prior to the SMO, or what he thought was going to be his own invasion, he received operational reports twice a day about Russian troops near Ukraine. He had to reformat himself into a nationalist patriot. The regime gave him this image makeover. Then in mid-February, Zelensky wanted to talk about Crimea more. He didn't know whether it be the Donbass or Crimea, which was more important to him. But then there were rumors that NATO wouldn't support the Ukrainian armed forces in the air. That those statements and those movements of troops and ships, that was to put pressure on Moscow, not to actually take action. If anything, the State Department very unexpectedly, although very briefly, announced its readiness for dialogue with Moscow on Ukraine. But back in 2020, there were indirect signs. You didn't need documents at the time. Of course, since 2014, a long-term conflict had been going on in the area, flaring up in decreases. Ukrainian military specialists were there at the conflict in Nagorno-Karabakh, between Azerbaijan and Armenia. High ranking, in fact. that were at Azerbaijani military schools, with the help of Turkey, of course. And they noted how drones were coming into their own. Of course, Donetsk doesn't have its own air force. They saw the war of the future as a drone war. And they looked, the Ukrainians looked to Azerbaijan as a possibility. A better option, certainly, than Georgia. The drone war can be successful and effective and fairly inexpensive. And especially going to Israel over this. Back then, Kiev was very close with Ankara and Baku, even Tbilisi. By 2021, the Turkey had modernized its drone force, and they could very easily end up in Donbas, along with Turkish military specialists. And the same thing goes for the Israelis. Israel had become a major producer of these drones. And Kolomoisky, of course, Igor Kolomoisky, was going to be a go-between here. UN Security Council was aware that something was up. They kept focusing on the Minsk stuff. Even the Russians were doing it. The Russians were doing everything in their power to keep from having to engage in the SMO. But any time this came up, whether it be in the UN or anywhere else, the Kiev representatives or the US or the British or the French would disrupt it. There were meetings that were canceled. One of them was canceled by the Ukrainian foreign minister, Dmytro Kuleba. The republics thought that they would still be able to speak at the meeting via video link, but they didn't show up. The Ukrainians had disrupted it. We're not going to be there. And any attempt for meetings, which the republics and Russia were trying to put forth, were disrupted or rejected, or they didn't show it, or something like that. According to the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute, in the year before the SMO, Ukraine received a huge amount of military equipment, especially offensive weapons. This was the indirect way to understand that they were planning an invasion of the Donbas, at least. Going back to 2018, from 2018 on, the military equipment they were receiving was very different from what they had received in the past. And Putin mentioned this, in fact. Heavy weaponry was being sent entirely of an offensive nature. Armored vehicles, infantry fighting vehicles, self-propelled howitzers, missiles, drones, all kinds of things like this. And since 2018, there was a sharp increase in this equipment supplied to Ukraine. Initially, there were a lot of outdated stuff, but modern stuff went through as well. The regime was pushing Kiev into war. Of course, Minsk was not seen as a long-term thing. It was rejected by all of these people. This is when, on February 18, 2022, the republics began evacuating many civilians to Russia. At the same time, they announced the mobilization of men aged 18 to 55. But in early 2022, they couldn't hide it anymore. Kiev couldn't hide it anymore. Almost all combat-ready units of the Ukrainian armed forces were concentrated on the border with Donbas. Hundreds of tons of military equipment and ammunition from American bases in Europe, Great Britain, and Canada were sent. Huge contingent of advisors and instructors from NATO special forces arrived and was increasing. The deployment of military hospitals near the contact line indicates that Ukraine is preparing military action. And just as importantly, a large landing force of foreign journalists showed up en masse. Of course, their purpose? To prepare fake information about a non-existent attack by Russia. This is what Operation Crushing Sword was. It was a disinformation tactic from the West. And Kiev has an entire ministry dedicated to this. They staged videos and everything else talking about, you know, savage Russian occupiers who attacked them. A lot of people don't remember, but at the instigation of Washington and London, more than 40 countries evacuated their diplomatic missions from Kiev. In fact, the largest British insurance companies warn that because of the military action in Ukraine, they're not going to make payments, especially on their air carriers. The constant demonization of Russia was, of course, financed by the West, distracting the attention of the world from the actual initiatives of Russia for its legitimate security guarantees. Even Biden was talking about, well, you know, he was mumbling about the Russian invasion planned. Of course, none of his forecasts ever come true. But gas prices went through the roof. Oh, and by the way, this invasion also is going to involve the destruction of the gas pipelines, especially if they're owned by Russians, to transition European countries to far more expensive American fuel. Of course, that was always the agenda. So, even in the foreign media, of their regular forces at the time, just before the invasion, 260,000 men, the armed forces of Ukraine, 150,000 were already within a mile of the Donbas border. And it continues to increase. Zelensky said that the territorial defense forces that were going to do the bulk of, this is just regulars, 260,000, that the irregulars are going to go up to 2 million, or the National Guard. So it started, the February 2014 revolution in Kiev, ended with the Russian invasion to protect Donbas and the breaking of whatever was left of independent Ukraine, made worse by the revolution in Crimea, essentially is what it was, being returned to Russia by a huge margin in the referendum, not to mention the successful uprising in the Donbas. The new, the other revolutionaries were going to impose the Ukrainian language, ban the Russian Orthodox Church there, and sell off their industrial assets. And Kiev failed in all of this. All of this became a matter of national humiliation. This was the foundation for the invasion plans that caused the special military operation. Keep in mind, from its independence in 91-92, that new Ukrainian elite didn't see a military as really necessary. Even by 2014, it wasn't much of a fighting force. Most of its equipment was in disrepair. You had low salaries. Ukrainian army were not really fighters. Only the national battalions, this is why they were so important, the Azov, etc., that were formed during and after the February 2014 revolution, they were the ones who were capable of fighting, and they were the most motivated. That's when the Americans came and offered the assistance. The tragedy, of course, is that the oligarchs in Kiev, exclusively, almost exclusively Jews, redirected all the finances from an increasingly impoverished third world country going to the army. In 2014, Ukraine's military budget was the equivalent of $1.7 billion American dollars. In 2019, it was $10 billion. When you look at its outlays for health and things like that, there's no comparison. Ukraine was so impoverished, it could barely function on IMF and EU loans. It was totally dependent on them. They were spending three times more on military purposes than the Western European states were. Just the dynamics of military spending alone show that Ukraine had been preparing for a large-scale war for 8 years. Again, Kiev was not in charge. The State Department was. The U.S. Embassy in Kiev, the CIA and FBI controlled the Ukrainian secret services. But at the time, 160 American instructors trained the army. And American and NATO aid to their armed forces continued to increase over time. Enormous funds were spent. Of course, all of that now is completely destroyed. By February 2022, the Ukrainian Air Force had about 150 combat-ready fighters, bombers and attack aircraft. Of course, those were all gone. They were mostly destroyed on the ground. Powerful fortifications were built near Donbas that could withstand retaliatory strikes. They're gone, assuming that they were ever built at all. I should note also that the soldiers' monthly salaries at the end of 2021 jumped from $170 a month to $510 a month. That's a massive increase in a very short period of time. The army initially was very reluctant to fight against Donbass. But this is why the brainwashing, this is why the national battalions were so important to all of this. But for 8 years, the media was tightly under the control of the state. It was essentially a one-party state, all, you know, supporters of Maidan. The incitement of hatred towards the Russians and the banning of the Russian church, this was the norm. History was totally rewritten. Separatists in the Donbass were terrorists. So the preparations for the invasion was, by the end of 2021, it was as good as it was going to get. But the only thing that raised the morale was Russophobia, and that really was in the national battalions. The diversion of desperately needed resources to Army, Navy, Air Force. You know, Navy and Air Force are expensive branches. Not to mention the 30 biological laboratories that we talked about already. Making Ukraine a weapon against Russia was a way to pay back the debt the IMF was sending loans that they knew they were never going to see again. They paid in blood. Didn't take long for Russia to realize what was happening. They reacted, however, very, very slowly. It was deliberate for the regime to ignore the legitimate security demands of Russia because the invasion of the Donbass, these preparations were in full swing and finished by the end of 2021, the beginning of 2022. You had 150,000 men, the most combat-ready units of the Ukrainian army were exclusively on the Donbass border. Now, had they invaded, they could have broken the resistance in a couple of days, maybe. But the SMO destroyed all of their plans. The blame for all of this lies entirely with the United States, which has used these boys in Ukraine, and it's only men who die in these wars, by the way. It's not men and women. They're paying their debt in blood just to maintain their image of global dominance, the huge profits the regime is reaping at everyone else's expense, although I don't think Boeing is doing very well today, but it's not just Ukrainian soldiers who are being tortured to death because of lack of supplies. That's on the hands of the regime, both sides of the Atlantic. You can't just blame Zelensky. Zelensky was installed. Victoria Nuland, these people need to be arrested. They need to be put on trial. The entire neocon establishment that was behind this, those that made the decisions that okayed the Ukrainian invasion plans against Donbass, whether it be in late February or early March of 2022, they too have to be brought to justice, although I don't know if that's ever going to happen. Who pays the most are Ukrainian boys literally rotting on the front lines right now, being sent to a certain death with no hope. I wish there was more people in America to do about that, but it's a tragedy that I don't think we could really wrap our heads around entirely. Thank you, everyone, for listening. I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.